Hey, this is Jeff Gorman, former announcer for Ring of Honor and also announcer for other wrestling promotions, MMA, baseball, what have you. And you are listening to the ROH Review.
Hello and welcome to the ROH Review interviews. I am three-time pro wrestling author Olive Newman. And for the first time in eight interviews, this being the eighth one, I am joined by my co-host, pro wrestling journalist Stephen Jackson. It's nice of you to join me, Stephen, after all this time. Like I was saying off air, I was getting to the point where if I go to a local show anytime soon, I'm going to have a sign that says Stephen Jackson fears doing duo ROH review interviews. So, because it got to that point, we were talking today and I was like, have you done that research? And I was getting to the point where I was thinking, he's going to say no and he can't do the show. And now with 11 minutes to go, he's probably got to go after that. But there you go, Steve. A nice long interruption to yourself. We'll get to you, Jeff. Don't worry.
I won't go away. I'll be here.
Yeah. What do you want to say on that long introduction, Stephen?
Yeah, just, you know, it's been a long time coming. There's been several interviews, which I've not been able to do due to work or due to contrasting schedules, but you know, for 10-11 minutes before I have to disappear, I'm looking forward to being part of this first interview with you, Oliver, and looking forward to speaking to you, Jeff, across the pond, and yeah, for those 10 minutes.
And Stephen's now as blurry as Jeff was about 3 hours ago, so this is going to be just fine and dandy. But yeah, we would be remiss not to talk about our interviewee today, and that is Jeff Gorman, and he has been involved in early ROH 2002 as a commentator and ring announcer in 2003-2004, and even a timekeeper at the end of 2004 before he retired from ROH at the time. And yeah, Jeff, hello and welcome.
Hello. Just want to let everybody know that I am back announcing a lot of different things. So that was a bit of a hiatus in my life and career, but I am back announcing again, and it's one of the things I love to do most.
Yeah. No, we completely understand why you took that hiatus, Jeff. Like I said, I saw it on a message board that ROH were giving you props for retiring for family reasons, so we definitely appreciate that. And yeah, like I said, thank you very much for supporting the ROH review up until this moment. And when you did, I decided to reach out via DM asking if you wanted to be interviewed, and here we are.
Great, I appreciate your love for ROH as well.
After all this time, it's been tricky doing this interview today. Jeff's phone connection wasn't great, but yep, we've got him at home now and it's much better. Into the interview we go, focusing on your commentary career. Stephen, if you want to take the lead because of having to leave shortly, and it's not going to be chronological, which is what we like to do, sorry, but for the sake of Stephen being involved, I'm going to have to let him take the lead.
Okay.
Yeah. So the first question I'd like to ask you is, what was it like working and announcing with Chris Lavey, aka Gabe Sapolsky, the sort of figurehead of Ring of Honor at the time? What was that like announcing with him?
It was very enlightening because you felt like you were sitting right next to the booker of ROH. And he said ahead of time, you know, Jeff, commentary is going to be a little different than you used to because, you know, he says, you know, there's a lot of storyline points that I want to get across. So one of the things I pride myself on as an announcer is listening to the boss and doing things his way. So I knew that I might not get to talk as much as I usually do, but so I let him say all his stuff and get everything out there. And I knew to have enough time to talk about a few of the moves that the wrestlers are used, and it worked out pretty well, especially after we had established a little bit of a rhythm and got onto the second batch of shows.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously it was a great time for Ring of Honor at that point, you know, the early 2000s. So what was it actually like being announcing those matches and seeing those wrestlers in the early parts of their career and what they were going into and that experience?
It was really amazing. I mean, you didn't know how big or how influential ROH was going to be yet, because it had just gotten started, but you can tell that you were on to something special. I mean, I was just very honored that they picked me to announce for them, because it really seemed when they were getting ROH together, especially in those first five or six shows, that they're really putting together an all-star team. I felt like I graduated to the all-star team when I got to Ring of Honor, because you could tell they got the best guys they could challenge up from the East Coast and the best from the Midwest, and they got some really good guys from Texas, and they brought in a few really good guys from the West Coast. It's like just the top, it's like they're trying to grab the best people from all the different regions of the United States, and then of course from the UK as well. And so it really, you know, the quality of the round up, you could tell that even though the company was just starting out from a financial standpoint and just putting itself together, you could tell the quality of the wrestling was really great and was just going to keep getting better.
Yeah, I mean, as me and Oliver as fans, you know, if you've listened to any of our podcasts, you can hear how much love we had for the early years and for some of those early matches. In terms of us both being British fans and fans of British wrestling, I mean, what was it? What one of the other main questions I wanted to ask was at Wrath of the Racket, what you were involved in with your ring announcing. What was it like seeing Nigel McGuinness's debut in Ring of Honor? I know we're not doing this chronologically, so that's a few years down the line, but what was that like and how he went forward in the company? Because we're both huge fans of his.
Yeah, I was always very proud of that. As Nigel just kept getting better and better and kept accomplishing more and more, I kept in the back of my head, you know, hey, I announced his first ROH match. I remember that that's when he started. That was just a really, you know, he did very well in that first match, and he just went on and on from there. So it was great to be like there on the ground floor. I got to do CM Punk's first match in Ring of Honor as well, do the play-by-play for that.
Stop reading my notes, Jeff.
See, you told me not to get in your head. My bad.
And I did say it was a dangerous place to be.
Uh-oh. I'll try to turn the page there.
No, that's happened on other interviews, Jeff. It's all good.
I'm sure.
And also as well, you had the privilege of, in terms of the British style as well, you had the opportunity to watch and commentate Christopher Daniels versus Doug Williams as well. I mean, seeing that in the early days of Ring of Honor, what was it like seeing Doug Williams come through and his work in those early years?
It was great because he, you know, brought a whole different kind of style. There were so many different styles, and then Williams had like one of his own. And I like the fact that I got to announce Williams in the main event of that one and of Scramble Madness with Bryan Danielson in the Iron Man match. Iron Man match is one of my favorite matches to announce because of, you know, the scoreboard and the clock, and it's really a lot like other kinds of sports. So I'm glad that I got to do two main event matches with Doug Williams, and they were both very different matches and really very enjoyable.
Yeah, they were. They were different. I mean, I don't know if I want to pass it over to Oliver for a second because he had a question. I don't need to carry on going forward, Oliver.
I would say for you to carry on. Yeah, I'll cover it.
Yeah, by all means.
I'm just thinking, get as much of your questions done as we can.
That's fine. Yeah, I mean, one of the talking, as you just got on the Scramble Madness, what was it actually like calling the Scramble Madness match and how that panned out? Because that was just nuts.
That was just a lot of fun. I mean, you just knew that you knew you weren't going to be able to call every single move because it was just like you could say it's like a fireworks display, but it's really almost like announcing a pot of popcorn going off. I mean, people were just popping in and out all the time. And, you know, got to call a quintuple dive. I got to teach Chris Lovey what comes after quadruple is quintuple. And I was trying to come up with an Eminem joke for Slim J, and I was able to throw one in there. I was very proud of myself. I'm like, yes, I got an Eminem joke, because, you know, he's going to come out there in that gimmick. It's like, I got to do some Eminem line.
I mean, that match was...
I've got to say, at this point, Jeff, your enthusiasm's infectious.
Thank you.
It's really good. It is. Hopefully, I mean, it makes also, Stephen want to stay longer than 2 minutes more.
Yeah.
On the clock.
In terms of the sort of those guys involved in the Scramble Madness as well. I mean, Amazing Red was one of the guys who was in it, and his early match with, I can never pronounce his name, Ikoto Hidaka. That was one of the matches you called.
Ikoto Hidaka.
Yeah. What was it like having that Japanese talent come through who were established as well, and having these matches with this American up-and-coming talent, and to call that, was that something special as well?
Yeah, it really was. I was fortunate. I got to call one or two of Ikuto Hidaka's matches in IWC in Pittsburgh, so I was a little bit familiar with him, so he wasn't completely new to me, but just the way that those two worked together in just a completely different style, that was just a lot of fun. I mean, it would have been great if Hidaka could have come over more and spent more time in Ring of Honor, but I think he was very much in demand, but those were some really special matches.
Yeah, and obviously then going forward through Ring of Honor, we've seen how the Japanese influence has come through, like the British influence. And I mean, although on that front, in terms of calling special matches, what was it like calling the first singles match between Bryan Danielson and Samoa Joe? I mean, what was that like from announcing at Revenge the Prophecy? I mean, what was that like seeing those two future legends going at it as well, seeing that up front and firsthand?
It was great to be right close to the ring for that, to hear how hard they were whacking each other. Kind of like I could feel Loki and Samoa Joe in the Fight Without Honor at Glory by Honor, even though I was like through the TV screen. I wasn't actually in Philadelphia. It was happening, but it certainly felt like it. But to actually be right there with Danielson and Joe, that was really, really amazing. And the amazing thing about that show is, you know, that wasn't even the main event. The main event was with the Prophecy, with, you know, AJ and them getting their revenge on the Prophecy. So to have a show like Danielson and Joe in the middle of the show was really impressive. I know Cabana was involved in, I think, a four-way. He looked really, really good in that one, too. And, of course, Cabana was a big favorite of the Pittsburgh fans, because we've had Cabanas on our show for IWC for, like, the previous few years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Getting on to Cabana, actually, because, like I said, mine aren't in chronological order due to time constraints, but one of the matches which I want to talk about as well was at Reborn Stage 2, the main event between CM Punk, Colt Cabana and the Briscoes, the title match, which is kind of in the early years of Ring of Honor, went down in history as one of the most important tag matches in the company's history. What was it like again? I mean, these are kind of similar questions, but seeing that up front as a announcer, what was that like?
Well, that was really special to me and my whole family, because we actually drove CM Punk and Colt Cabana to the shows when they were coming to Cleveland. And we would pick them up and drive them to Pittsburgh. So we got to actually spend a lot of time in the car with Punk and Cabana. So to see them, you know, grow together, both get to Ring of Honor and then both excel. And you know, my wife and kid were there in Chicago, which was also special because I went to college in Chicago, and to have those two, the two Chicago hometown boys, win the belts. That was just fantastic. I'm so glad I got to be there. And it was also the first Ring of Honor show in Chicago. So for all those reasons, to win the belts at the end, that was just, it couldn't have been any more perfect.
I mean, I love that match. Sorry, you're about to break in there, Oliver, with something.
You've got to ask how Punk and Cabana were in the back of that car, considering the video that we saw on the way to Philadelphia.
Punk was pretty quiet. Was a little more talkative, but you know, they weren't too big of a chatterboxes. We had when we had Mick Foley with us once, we were just talking with him the entire time, because we did a similar thing where we brought Foley. So he was a lot more talkative, but they were a little more subdued than you would expect.
Yeah, especially at that time, not now, but maybe at that time, especially Punk. Also, one of the other main matches which I wanted to ask about, which again leads into that greatness now and what we've seen over the past decade, was the match between American Dragon Bryan Danielson again and AJ Styles, All-Star Extravaganza. Like, that match stood out through the screen. But again, what was that like being in the building for that, not just as a commentator and announcer, but as a fan of wrestling? Like, the building must have just been electric for that thing, because it's just unreal to watch on screen.
It was really beautiful. And it's just the way that they match up, you know, so well physically, and, you know, just the kind of styles that they have. I mean, those are the two kind, almost like an Okada and Omega type of thing, where they just are the perfect opponents for each other. And like, you could watch these two wrestle each other forever, pretty much. And so it was, It was really a good way to establish that number one contenders trophy, even though that trophy really lasts a whole long time. But have AJ Styles won, and they kind of dressed up the trophy like AJ, which I thought was kind of cute. They sort of put a little AJ Styles on the guy on the trophy. But that was a great match to establish that. And it was very satisfying, but it also left you wanting more. You could say, I could see these guys wrestle each other two or three times. And I guess we did.
Yeah.
That number one contenders trophy. I love that thing.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was probably not necessarily the trophy, but just the concept of it was a really good idea. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean,
of course, the prophecy was holding it to keep contenders away from Xavier. I thought that was really nice.
Which was that was even better. And you talk about the AJ Styles and Bryan Danielson, they went on to have an even better match at Main Event Spectacles in 2003, didn't they? And yeah, could watch them wrestle all day and night, I think.
I'm trying to think if have we seen that in the WWE with those guys there, or have we not? I'm trying to remember if
we've seen Styles versus Daniel Bryan,
maybe on TV, I guess.
Pay-per-view, isn't it?
Because I know they did Punk and Daniel Bryan at a pay-per-view. I don't know if they've done Styles and Daniel Bryan at a pay-per-view.
Survive series.
Over the last few years.
It's happened. I can't think off the top of my head which show.
Something.
Yeah. It's happened on a pay-per-view. It's definitely happened on the pay-per-view, and it was a fantastic match, as you'd expect. Can't think which one off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm. I'll have to ask Google.
Yeah.
We've done enough Googling today, Jeff.
I mean, in terms of that chemistry as well, we have to ask, a world title classic, Punk versus Joe. I mean, history in the making, being there for that as well. What was that like? I know these are similar questions, but what was that like? That must have been incredible.
Oh, yeah. Well, I kind of knew what was going on because somebody told me to make sure I had a stopwatch for that match because who knows, it might go all 60 minutes. And of course, you know, with the hardcore ROH fans, they're going to be sitting there with a timer and they want to make sure that nothing's getting shaved off, you know, that there really is a full 60 minutes. And I didn't have a watch, but fortunately, Bryan Danielson, of all people, was nice enough to let me borrow his watch. Of course, he wasn't going to be needing it while he was in the ring. So I used Danielson's watch to time Punk and Joe, and it just kept, you know, I didn't know for sure that it was going to be a draw, but I was certainly ready as it ticked down there. And it just turned out to be just really something amazing. And I was nice that they brought out a new title belt at the beginning of that match. Les Thatcher brought that out for Samoa Joe. And again, of course, going to a draw, you certainly, you know, can build up to a future match or two. And it turned out to be a very memorable trilogy.
And probably the most important trilogy in Ring of Honor history. I mean, it's one of the matches and feuds what got me so invested in the company, and one of the things I think what people search out for even now on, you know, on YouTube or on online, that whole trilogy was just unbelievable.
Longer fuzzy, Stephen. You must have to earn this status.
You know, a feud like that, a trilogy, doesn't really have to go back and forth, because I believe it was like, you know, because Punk didn't win the title. I think it was like, what, a couple of draws and then Joe won, if I'm not mistaken? That really made Punk as well. Punk didn't have to win any of those matches to really be made. So by the time he became ROH champion, everybody was ready and to accept him as ROH champion.
Yeah. I mean,
they took the feud international over here to the UK as well. I don't know if you're aware of that, Jeff.
I don't think I was.
Okay. Yep. It was the Wrestling Channel's International Showdown, which I'll talk about in a little bit. But yeah, they CM Punk versus Samoa Joe was a part of that card as well here in the UK. And it was fantastic.
Final two questions before I have to scoop, Jeff, sadly, because I'm really enjoying this interview.
We can see you clearly now.
There we go. I feel like singing the song. That's how important this is. I'm not, but I feel
what, like.
what was it, at Ring of Honor Gold, and he'd had some previous interactions in the company, Ricky Steamboat, a man with such incredible legacy in the wrestling business and kind of embodied that honor sort of style of wrestling, which, you know, the code of honor and various things of that nature. Did you have any kind of interaction with Ricky, and what was he like when he came in? Was he very sort of open and things, or what was that like?
Yeah, he was very friendly and really nice to everybody. I only really just pretty much got to say hi to him, but he seemed like he was having a really good time. It was very calm and at peace. And it was nice. I wouldn't say that Steamboat was one of my favorite wrestlers. He was my mom always thought that Steamboat was always getting killed because it would seem like Tom Morocco was killing him, or Jake Roberts was killing him, or the Macho Man was killing him, or just so what a good seller he was. Like, oh my gosh, somebody just killed my throat or blasted me in the head, I'm gonna die. So he did a very good job of being a babyface. So I'm glad I got to work with him and got to meet him, because I was also there in Chicago when he won the title from Ric Flair at WrestleWar 89. Which was amazing, because, you know, I went there and went to the pay-per-view. I didn't really expect Steamboat to win the belt, but he did. I was like, whoa. So that was really amazing to be there for that match, and then to eventually get to see, to meet him later on.
Wow. That's another amazing match. Oh, yeah. And kind of, you know, built on that.
As a broken but glorious tie-in, because that's who we're hosted by. We did a perfect WrestleMania card last night. And the match I put forward for the IC title was Savage versus Steamboat from WrestleMania 3. And that's when he had, like, injured larynx and all that. So, yeah, I think all of that kind of led to you feeling the way you did when he won the title. If he hadn't gone through all that, it isn't going to be elation as much as you felt it when he won the title. So, and that's why he needed to go through it.
And the final question I have for you is, what was it like, or any thoughts or memories working with Trent Acid, who was a guy in the early years of Ring of Honor and CZW who made a massive impact on the independent scene and then tragically passed away? But did you have any sort of memories or any sort of thoughts on Trent and his impact?
I really liked his work. I didn't really get a chance to meet him very much. I think I was on one show with him when he was in the IWC along with Johnny Cashmere's the Backseat Boys. But I don't think I was on a whole lot of live shows with him, but I really respected his ability and, you know, just what he could do. You know, not just, he could really do well singles and tag team. He could pretty much do anything you asked him to do. So he was always, you know, a good addition to any card, I thought.
Yeah. And I mean, they recently had the Acid Cup in his memory, did Game Changer Wrestling, which they put for free on independent wrestling TV, which is shows his legacy still lives on, you know, and it's just a shame that he, you know, passed away too soon. But, you know, it's great to know that he's still got a legacy there and he's still part of the Ring of Honor faithful. So that's my set of questions, Jeff. They kind of short and sweet, but it's been, you know, a pleasure. If I didn't have work tomorrow, then it would be much longer, but I have to scoot now. But thank you for coming on the show and being interviewed, and I'll leave you in the careful hands of Oliver. And definitely catch up with you again sometime, and stay safe during the corona outbreak, and your family as well.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Same to you. You be safe, and it's great to hear from you. Thanks.
Thank you. You too.
Good debut, Stephen. Good questions. If you've got anything else, because I know you haven't finished, just text me.
I will do so.
I'll try and ask Jeff on your behalf. Hello.
Hey there.
Yeah, Stephen had to leave because he's got work in the morning. Luckily, I don't. So.
There isn't.
Silver linings and all that. Yeah, chronologically, I would have liked to have done it this way, but we had to have Steven involved. Okay, so you saw the beginning of the Homicide Steve Corino feud. Did you see it becoming as brutal and violent as it would end up being?
I didn't expect it to become that violent. You knew it was kind of off to a pretty good start, but yeah, it was. It just really escalated out of control, and it was kind of interesting to see. Very ironically, to start out with those two as partners and to announce those two as partners, and considering how everything fell apart from there on. And that really is one of the things that made ROH thing at the beginning, to have that kind of a really hot blood feud there. And of course, Carino already established as the former ECW champion, and to put Homicide right there on that level, that really helped Homicide, I think, to become ROH champion later on.
Absolutely. And you mentioned this earlier because you were reading my notes.
Exactly.
But yeah, you commentated on Loki versus Samoa Joe. For us fans, podcasters, authors, journalists, this is revered. We love this match. I went as far as writing about it and saying this was pro wrestling. As violent as pro wrestling can be, I think, is what I had it as. What was it like calling this match?
It was really different because there were times that I actually tried to not talk so that you all could hear how hard they were hitting each other. I talked, you know, less in that match than I usually do, just so you could get the physicality. And of course, you could have just turned the sound off and you could have just felt the physicality just by the way they're blasting each other. And it was just nothing I'd really ever seen before in wrestling. And the remarkable thing about that is that that was Samoa Joe's first match in ROH. I mean, to make that kind of a first impression in your very first match, I mean, at that point you see that, you're like, man, the sky's the limit with this guy. And of course, that's what happened. He ended up being the longest reigning ROH champion ever. Does he still have that record? I think he does. Has anyone beaten that record?
He's one of them, if not still hold the record. I'm not sure. I've kind of got into ROH again since November 2019 with the start of the ROH review. I went away for a little while. Stephen would more know that. I think he's definitely up there. Somebody might have surpassed him, Brian Danielson maybe, but yeah, he's definitely up there as one of the longest reigning champions.
Yeah.
Okay. Obviously, there was hatred towards the all-around best and the second ever ROH champion, Xavier. Did you sense the hatred? And looking back on it, 18 years later, do you think that he was kind of underrated, maybe, as a champion and as a wrestler?
I thought he was a little bit underrated. Yeah, I think he got kind of a little bit of a bad rap because you go from, you know, Loki, who was really on everybody's radar as an all-star, and then you go to someone who's not really as well-known. I mean, they could have, you know, picked, you know, someone like John Walters or Scoot Andrews or Slick Wagner Brown or maybe someone like that who not everybody was really familiar with. But at that point, you got to try to, I guess you got to kind of give him a chance. And I think that he did a really good job in that role where, you know, he's got a lot of potential, but he also has a lot of help too. And, you know, you can tell that he's part of a group, but in a way he's sort of being used by that group in order to, you know, consolidate power. And I thought he, you know, athletic standpoint, he held his own pretty well with, you know, Jay Briscoe and Paul London and AJ Styles. And, you know, I mean, he doesn't go down in history as really a super worker in everybody else's eyes. But I thought, you know, for that time, I thought he acquitted himself really well as a champion. I'm kind of proud to say that he was kind of like my champion, you know, like during my time announcing it. I really always liked him as the champion.
Yeah. I completely agree from that situation. Like I said, the Paul London matches, they stand the test of time. Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about Ricky Steamboat a little bit earlier and stuff. You know, maybe Xavier and Paul London were the Ricky Steamboat and Ric Flair of ROH at that time, maybe. And for me, the Xavier John Waters feud in 2003 was exceptional. I still love that feud to this day.
Stuff.
Yeah. So you also commentated on CM Punk's debut at All Star Extravaganza in 2002. We touched on it a little bit, but did you see the potential that Punk had at that time to be who he went on to be?
I saw the potential that he had to be who he was in Ring of Honor because he was one of our top stars in IWC, and you could tell he had a ton of potential, a ton of heart, drive, and passion. And it wasn't a surprise to see him make it to the top of ROH. I was surprised to see him make it to the top of the WWE. I mean, I was really happy for him that he made it into the company, but the fact that he went so far, really, like I said, all the way to the top. He really surpassed everybody's expectations of him. I think he can really say that he didn't get cheated. He just got every drop of success that he possibly could have gotten to go up against guys like The Rock and Brock Lesnar and Undertaker. He really came a long way from, you know, the shows that we did in Pittsburgh together, and even a long way from that very debut match in Ring of Honor. He really shot for the moon there. Not to mention trying MMA and going to the UFC.
Absolutely. And also on the All-Star Extravaganza, you called a match for 0-1, basically, between Loki, Steve Corino, Masato Tanaka, and Shinjiro Otani. I think I got that right. I'm not very good at pronouncing the Japanese wrestling names, but hopefully I nailed that one. What was this like? With this being a company-based match main event of the actual show of Ring of Honor, this was obviously huge for the company. Did you kind of sense that at the time?
Oh, yeah, you could tell it really felt like it was a Japanese show main event. I mean, because just the style and the six-man battle and, you know, just the fact that some of the wrestlers came back a second time to wrestle in that main event indicated that, you know, this is something that, you know, they have what they're doing in Ring of Honor, but now this is like a special match they're going to have for 0-1. And it was really like kind of having a taste of that promotion here in ROH. And, you know, just mentioning the guys that were in that one match, I mean, it kind of boggles my mind that I got to announce that, you know, with Otani and Tanaka and people like that. It was just really something else.
Yeah, and something that Steven pointed out, Samoa Joe was in the corner of Loki after that match at Glory of Honor the month before.
Yeah.
So, because of the 0-1 connection. We have as well the importance of branching out. So, obviously, ROH was from Philadelphia. And they branched out whilst you was involved to Wakefield, Massachusetts, to West Mifflin, PA, to the Frontier Fieldhouse in Chicago, the Montgomery Fairgrounds, and Wilmington, Ohio, to go along with the Murphy Rec Center. Did you kind of sense the different crowds? So what was, in your opinion, the best crowd to commentate in front of as ROH commentator?
That's a good question. They were all good in their own ways. I mean, I was a lot more familiar with the Pittsburgh crowd because a lot of them were the same fans that came to our shows. And I think it was in that Revenge on the Prophecy was in the same building that we would run for IWC. And then, you know, in Dayton, because, you know, I'm from a different part of Ohio. I wasn't really that familiar with Dayton, although I did go down there for King of the Ring 93 for that first King of the Ring pay-per-view. But they really brought in a pretty rabid crowd from everywhere, from, you know, Cincinnati, from Indiana, Columbus. They were really getting a lot of people sort of descending on Dayton for those ROH shows. And then Chicago, of course, there's a very rabid crowd, especially for the main event, you know, cheering for their hometown guys. So, probably would have to give a slight edge to Chicago, considering it's always just been a mecca hotbed of wrestling ever since I went to college there. But they were all, you know, different, but they were all really hot crowds, especially Dayton, because we would come back to Dayton over and over, and we still had really good fans who kept coming back to those shows.
Yeah. And for you mentioning King of the Ring 93 and for the work you've done outside of ROH, we've got to get you on the main show. I think the guys would love to ask you about that, myself included. Yeah. Bret Hart versus Mr. Perfect and everything. So we'll have to get you back on the main show there, Jeff. that's another story for another time. Okay. Steven asked about that match. Okay. So, yeah, for me, Bryan Danielson versus Paul London. He's my modern-day favourite wrestler, Paul London. At Night of the Butcher, what was it like commentating on this match? Because watching it through the screen, it's a technical masterpiece.
Well, yeah, you can tell that those two really were familiar with each other, of course, both coming from the Texas Wrestling Academy. And you had that connection that you would have between, like, Punk and Cabana as opponents, between, you know, Alex Shelley and, you know, Jimmy Jacobs. And, you know, then with Matt Sydal and Delirious, you had these guys that were so familiar with each other that, you know, they would just make magic in the ring. And that was how it was with, you know, Danielson and London. And to an extent, you know, guys like Spanky and Michael Shane, too, when those four were all competing, kind of trying to become like the sort of the top name to come out of Texas to ROH. And so again, and Danielson and London also have really, like I said, they've just matched up well from a size standpoint, a style standpoint, the way Brian did with AJ Styles. And it was just, it was similar, like I said, with Styles, you know, you really appreciate that match, and you know that you could see this matchup down the road and it'll be different and it'll still be really good.
Yeah. And it actually happened 3 times in ROH, didn't it? As part of the Gauntlet match at All-Star Extravaganza, that was the first match between them. Night of the Butcher was the second match, and then the 2 out of 3 falls at Epic Encounter in 2003. Right. So, yeah, just moving on to your ring announcing career in ROH as well. It's been said in other interviews and stuff, at West Mifflin, PA, before the main event, the ROH fans were chanting your name. This must have been very special to you.
It really was. It was beautiful because they've been with me for ever since like 1995, coming over from Ohio. I used to ring the bell, you know, just to get a chance to get on the show. And, you know, then I finally got a chance to announce for Norm Connors and Steel City Wrestling. And, you know, he really stuck with me all the way through Steel City and put me on IWC. And he's the one who personally recommended me to Rob Feinstein for Ring of Honor. So he's really a great guy, one of my best friends, and really promoted me there. And just to be able to, I never would have gotten to that point in front of that crowd in Pittsburgh, who was appreciating me, if it weren't for him. So just that was just a beautiful moment.
Yeah, I read that as well, and said you've been friends for 10 years at that point, and you would stay friends even if he's outside the wrestling business, which you were at the time. So and to go to the main event there, because we touched on a little bit of this when Stephen was with us, AJ Styles and Loki against Christopher Daniels and Xavier. That's a pretty good dream match in the early 2000s, isn't it? Watching this back, this is a crazy main event. What was it like being ringside for it?
It was really fantastic, again, to be that close. And it just shows that, you know, not every show has to have, you know, especially in ROH, where they're really trying to make every show special. You know, not every show has to end with an ROH championship match. I mean, to have that kind of heat built up over the last previous shows, to have like a big grudge tag team match. And it was really just that special. And again, it's in front of a different crowd than the Philly fans, you know, just had like, here's something special for the Pittsburgh fans. And of course, the Pittsburgh fans were also very familiar with Loki and AJ Styles, because they also appeared for us in the IWC. In fact, Loki and Chris Daniels were both in the first Super Indie tournament, which I announced in 2002, just as ROH was getting started.
Yeah. I just realized I might have missed that question. Yeah, I have actually. Going back to Scramble Madness, it's not chronological, Jeff. It doesn't matter. going back to Scramble Madness, I think this is the first match between Christopher Daniels and AJ Styles in Ring of Honor. Correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff. I think it was.
I think you're right.
Yeah. They've obviously had incredible matches in all different promotions. I was lucky enough to see them at the aforementioned International Showdown show, which had Punk versus Joe on it. They stole the show in the main event, as you would imagine they would. AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels is always magic. This one was no different. What was it like calling this one?
It was just really, you know, again, it's the same type of chemistry like we talked about with some of these other opponents, you know. And of course, you know, Daniels and Styles, you know, they've just competed against each other so many times. They were just kind of getting started there, but you could just sort of get a taste of what they were going to do, because, you know, you have Styles being, you know, such a quintessential babyface. I know he's not always a babyface now, but back then he was your real good up and coming babyface. And then of course with Daniels being, you know, the dastardly heel, of course, leader of the Prophecy. And it's always such a great gimmick with, you know, him and going people like Raven and Bray Wyatt being sort of like the leader of my sort of band of followers. That's always such a fun gimmick. And Daniels was just so good at that, having his sort of minions around him and stuff, and trying to keep them all in line was always fun, trying to see if you just get everybody on the same page.
Yeah, absolutely. And excuse me, Stephen touched on this earlier about Wrath of the Racket and Nigel McGuinness, but I'm going to go a different route. Homicide was tagging with AJ Styles at the time, and is on the DVD or whatever you announced as the tag team champion. That was a little bit out of left field for me. You was ringside for this. How did this kind of work?
So I'm having a hard time remembering this. So this was what, 2003, and the champions were, I think the champ were, is that when Styles and Red were the champions?
Styles and Red were the champions. Yeah, I believe so. So I'm guessing Red was injured, and somebody could come in, but AJ Styles in Homicide, and then all of a sudden,
quite a contrast. Well, sometimes those make the best teams, you know.
Yeah,
where you had two completely different partners. I think my favorite team like that was Owen Hart and Yokozuna. I mean, that was just the perfect contrasting tag team, you know, even more so than the original Hart Foundation. It's just, and so Styles and Homicide with, you know, the technical wrestling and then the violence, you know, that really did make it a good team. And it was too bad that Red had to get hurt, but you know, you sort of got a glimpse of an outstanding team like that.
Yeah, definitely need you for the main show when you're talking about Yokozuna and Owen Hart. There's a guy in there, Mark Fox, and he would definitely want to talk to you about that. But yeah, so I'm guessing Styles was able to pick a partner to take Red's place, and he picked Homicide. Okay, and once again, you were ringside for the Prophecy against Second City Saints from Battle Lines are drawn, and this once again was a crazy match with Christopher Daniels going through the table with the Pepsi plunge and basically selling it like there's no tomorrow, like he was dead. What was he like being ringside for this?
Now that I think I remember the best as far as what it was actually like to be at ringside, because I was running for my life during that match. I don't know if you could tell, but you know, the barricades around the ring were really, really tight, and I don't think I could find a way to escape. I must have forgotten where the aisle was, because I was like constantly like in peril. I was like running here and there, just trying to keep from having bodies land on me and stuff. And to see, so I was like right in the middle of that war. And you know, the two things that stuck out the most to me was BJ Whitmer hitting the wrist clutch exploder on, was it Lucy? Some woman he gave the wrist clutch exploder to. It was some female valet.
I would believe at that time Tracy Brooks, because Lucy got taken out at the end of Wrath of the Racket, and BJ Whitmer was the one that did it, and that's why he joined the Prophecy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I knew that Lucy was involved somehow, because I know that Punk was very upset about Lucy's disappearance or something.
Yeah.
And then the other one was somebody just murdered poor Paul Turner with a chair. I mean, that was like one of the worst chair shots I've ever seen. I was like right there, and the referee just got smoked. I mean, it was crazy. And that was just nuts to be like literally in the middle of that action, and it was hard to get away from the action.
And then he reincarnated into an AEW referee after all that.
Maybe.
this one popped up, and obviously you were ring announcing for this as well. I've seen the first of these matches between these two gentlemen. Hurricane John Waters and Chad Collier. The first one was technical masterpiece. I haven't quite seen this one. I'm not sure what kind of wrestling you prefer, Jeff, but what was it like being ringside for this match?
It was really good, because I think the one of the good things about Ring of Honor is you had a lot of room to embrace different styles. And, you know, a match like that, you know, with sort of the, you know, technical masterpiece and stuff, you know, the fans aren't going to boo that. They're not going to say that it's slow or boring. You know, they're going to give that kind of match a chance. And it was nice to see those two do the kind of wrestling that they do best, and have an appreciative audience for that. You know, people like, and I think Matt Stryker kind of comes to mind too. The Matt Stryker with a Y from the Midwest.
Yeah, Unibrow.
He was in a lot of those matches too. He was like one of the big stars on those Dayton shows, because he wrestled a lot locally in the sort of the Cincinnati area. So, you know, he got a lot of good opportunities on those ROH shows too, I thought.
Yeah, I think this is a question that Stephen was going to pose, but he was a part of a pure wrestling match on Battle Lines are Drawn, I believe, against Alex Shelley. So I've recently watched that match, and once again, yeah, he was a fantastic technical wrestler, and was up there in terms of the number one contender trophy, because he won the Field of Honor, didn't he, at Final Battle 2003. That's me sharing my knowledge there, Jeff.
Very good. Yeah, and it was fun as the ring announcer to be able to kind of explain the rules of the pure wrestling matches to the people. And you have to really do a good job of that because that's how they have to react to, you know, the rope breaks and, you know, just so they all understand it and stuff. It kind of felt like how I felt like Howard Finkel explaining the rules to the Royal Rumble every year.
Absolutely. Yeah, I didn't actually get the part when you, because you ring announced, but for the pure title, that was our thing. That was mine and Steven's thing. So I'd be happy to hear that. For 12 weeks on the ROH review, we were like, bring back the pure title. And then on the 13th week, pure title tournament. And then coronavirus came along and screwed it all up. Right. So hopefully postponed and not cancelled.
Right. Same with past versus present. We need past versus present to happen.
We need past versus present, Jeff. Get you behind the booth again.
Please.
We'll start a petition for you.
Ring announce the past guys. I wouldn't mind being the old guy ring announcing the past guys. I'd be happy to do that. So I'm officially lobbying to get on that show once they reschedule it, whether it be as a commentator or ring announcer.
We're officially lobbying on your behalf as well. So we'll see what happens with that. Yeah. You was ringside once again. The amount of things that you saw from ringside during the first match, I think, in ROH between these two gentlemen again. Bryan Danielson and Homicide, did you see that they would be interlinked? So they went on to have a best of five series. And then in the end, in Final Battle 2006 in New York City, Homicide finally won the ROH World title. Did you see in this match from your position that they'd be interlocked and there would be, always interconnected and be able to build a feud just from this match to where they got to in 2006?
Actually, I didn't. It was a very good match, but I didn't know that they were going to have such a long series against each other. But if they worked out great because they're just so different, just their approaches and their styles and stuff. And they really had a lot to offer each other as opponents. And again, that ended up being kind of a sleeper hit as far as ROH goes, you know, to have those two, you know, have that many good matches against each other. It was really, the one I was at was really good, but again, I didn't expect them to have that much in them as far as opponents go.
Yeah. And one, I think Homicide is responsible for Danielson finding his inner, you know, cockiness and his brawling ability and stuff. I think without this match and then the best of five series that I've just mentioned, would he have found that and would he have become the ROH world champion? See, that's a question for the folks at home. So from the World Title Classic, Stephen asked about Joe versus Punk. For me, in this situation, on this show, you saw Generation Next up close. Did you see the impact they would make on the world of wrestling as we stand here on the 1st of April 2020?
I think you could sell that they would go pretty far, but you didn't expect them necessarily to have that much of influence because you didn't know where they were all going to go. You didn't know if they're going to stay together like a four horseman group and all travel together, but you know, or if they were going to sort of branch off and stuff. And you know, it was really, I think it's really been fun to watch Jack Evans, you know, where he spent so much time in Mexico and then to see him come back with AEW and just be like this experienced yet still young and that still really amazing high flyer. Mm-hmm. And you know, he's got a lot to offer. I mean, he's in a tag team right now, but he could be a singles. He's got so much charisma, and you know, and then to see Roderick Strong, you know, just succeed with just his, you know, straightforward style, not trying to be too fancy, yet he's just sort of bold forward and we've been able to get like a lot of success in WWE. And then, you know, Aries and Shelley have gone all over the place, and you know they've—it's funny, just they've all succeeded, but they haven't all succeeded together, which is why it's always special to see them in early ROH as that Generation Next group. And I don't know if you remember from that show they did. I was fortunate to be on Cole Cabana's show, his Good Times, Great Memories, with a few other sort of the old guy version of Generation Next that they were making fun of.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that, actually.
It's me and Les Thatcher and a couple other guys, and I didn't realize until the end that they were making fun of us and calling us an old guy version of Generation X.
Oh, no, I'll have to check that out. That sounds,
and I wasn't even 40 at the time. I'm like, I'm not that old yet. I'm sure I looked it without any hair.
Yeah, for us, the guy that's shining brightest at the moment in ROH is Alex Shelley. Me and Stephen are going to start another petition for him to be the ROH world champion. To go along with your petition to be on past versus present, Jeff, we're allowed to juggle things here on the ROH review.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just to finish up, another couple of quick questions. Are you watching ROH in 2020? And if so, what are your thoughts on the product?
Well, it's kind of difficult because I don't really – I'm kind of out here in the country. I don't really have cable, and I can kind of watch whatever I can on, you know. It's like YouTube, and I got the WWE Network for Christmas. Thanks, Mom. So I'm kind of cobbling things together here and there, but I haven't been able to watch as much ROH as I would like. But I have seen some of it, and I, you know, I'm really impressed with, you know, Ian Riccaboni and the job that he's done on commentary. That job is in really good hands with him, so I'm really happy for him. And you know, it's just been fun to see that partnership with New Japan. So, you know, being able to watch ROH and just see so much of the really top New Japan talent as well. And you know, those are and you know, also it's been fun to see how well Shane Taylor's done, because Shane Taylor's been with us here in Cleveland on the Cleveland scene, and getting to work with him and then to see him not just go to ROH, but, you know, really have a strong run as TV champion. So ROH has really been fun to watch. It's difficult because, you know, it's the same type of thing that happened with ECW. I mean, you come out with a different style and the big guys, they co-opt it, and then what do you do then? And so ROH has had to deal with, you know, NXT and, of course, also AEW sort of presenting almost that same style. And it's been tough for ROH to have to kind of keep reinventing himself. But, you know, they keep unearthing, you know, some new talent. And that's one of the best things about Ring of Honor, to see who's going to come up next.
Yep. And when you talk about Shane Taylor, that's another one of our guys, best promo guy in ROH. And we was delighted when he re-signed for the company. Yes. But yeah, look, that's why we were drumming in, do the pure title, pure wrestling division as one of the matches on your show, because that is who you are. And then build the card around whatever other match. But the identity of ROH is pure wrestling and that pure wrestling division. And then, like I said, after 12 weeks, we finally got there until coronavirus.
Right.
So,
this is. We have a lot of good stuff to look forward to from Ring of Honor once they can get going again.
Yeah. Hopefully, like I said, it's been postponed rather than canceled, because some amazing things on the horizon, like you said. And yeah, I think my last question for yourself, a dream match to commentate on. Two wrestlers, four wrestlers, however many you want. What would be your dream match to commentate on, first of all?
Well, it's kind of amazing that, you know, I think I've been asked this question in the past, and it would be for somebody like AJ Styles or somebody like Colt Cabana to be in, but have it be at the highest level, to be at WWE, to be at WrestleMania. And as kind of crazy as that sounded at the time, here's AJ Styles about to wrestle The Undertaker at WrestleMania. Yeah. Just, that kind of happened.
In an empty arena, Jeff.
Yeah.
Or in a graveyard, actually, that I think it's going to take place. I don't know. It's one of those.
Right.
Crazy.
To have CM Punk get to defend the title against Chris Jericho at WrestleMania. I mean, it's been really amazing. I mean, some of these, it's almost like we have to keep coming up with new dream matches, because some of those dream matches have kind of come true. I guess it would be, you know, I guess really you can just take any of those guys, you know, probably Styles versus Punk, I think, would be a good dream match that hasn't really happened on the main stage. And that'd be a great WrestleMania main event if Uncle Pepsi ever wants to come back.
Absolutely.
Our daughter's a baby. She's 16 now, so we still call him Uncle Pepsi.
That's fantastic. And from a ring announcing perspective, who would you like to ring announce?
Well, again, I've actually been, you know, fortunate enough to ring announce a lot of people who have done really well and have gone very far. But I guess it would be, because, you know, of course, I'd, you know, love to someday get to WWE. I guess it would be to someone like The Undertaker or Goldberg, or to be able to do one of those people at the very, very top echelon, you know, Shawn Michaels or Triple H, or, you know, some of those people been all the way at the top, you know, above my head for such a long time, to be in WWE and call some of those all-time iconic names. That would really be the best.
Yeah. And since you mentioned this as well, who would you like to be a timekeeper for? Let's cover all your trades here, Jeff.
Right. I'd be happy to ring the bell for anybody. It's, you know, because you can tell, you know, I love doing this. And like I said, you know, I wouldn't have even gotten to Pittsburgh if I hadn't driven, you know, 4 hours just to ring the bell. And then it's kind of come in full circle to have my last ROH show be ringing the bell. So, you know, if there's a bell, I'll be happy to come ring it for you because I just love wrestling.
Yeah, absolutely, Jeff. We're so glad that we got this off the ground. With all the technical difficulties from earlier. And I can obviously say on Stephen's behalf, fantastic interview. Like I mentioned right at the beginning, your enthusiasm is infectious. Your voice always was fantastic on commentary during the shows that you did in 2002. That's why I was like, Jeff Gorman, and then you followed us on Twitter. I was like, okay, yeah, that's fantastic. And yeah, we just thank you for taking time out of your day to do this interview. It's been a real pleasure.
Great, thank you so much for having me. I'd love to be on one of your main shows again. Like you said, it's just great to meet you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we go, do you want to plug anything? Talk about your social media. How can people contact you?
You can find me on Twitter at Jeff D. Gorman. You see what I'm doing as far as if I'm announcing wrestling, MMA. Fortunately, I got a lot of baseball coming up with the Lake Erie Crushers. But I just want you to know that I'm still here, and I'm still trying to be the best, and still trying to make it as far as I can get in all three of those sports, wrestling, MMA, and baseball. So I'm out there, and I'm ready to announce whatever you want me to announce.
Absolutely, Jeff. Yeah, once again, thank you very much for your time today, tonight. And yeah, we're just so glad we got this off the ground because it's been really fantastic interview. And in terms of the main show, yeah, definitely need to have you on that because we've talked about ROH, but your career is a lot longer than that. So we'll definitely have you on the main show down the road.
All right, sounds good.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks a lot. Have a good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
We are extremely proud to be a part of the Broken But Glorious Wrestling Podcast team. They are our hosts, and we really appreciate it. So go follow them on Twitter, at BBGW Wrestling and BBGWrestling.com. We have a partnership with Powerslam.tv, and they have over 6,500 hours of professional wrestling from 140-plus promotions. Use that on us for free for a month using the code BROKENFREE.
So I'm a member of the Wrestling Estate. You can find us on Twitter at The Wrestling EST. My most recent article was a countdown of the top 10 WCW Cruiserweights, which was a great fun to write back in the day, which has come back from the archives.
Brilliant article. As long as Ultimo Dragon's in it. It's a brilliant article.
Thank you. And so The Wrestling Estate, we cover WWE, Impact Wrestling, Ring of Honor, New Japan and the independent scene. We have a monthly newsletter which we send out, and each week we all take part in a round table, which is a series of questions we get asked, and then they're all posted on the website for you all to enjoy. So check us out at The Wrestling Estate, at The Wrestling EST.
To myself, I'm a free-time pro wrestling author. Firstly, Fans Perspective, One Man's Exploration of British Wrestling. ROH is in this book, so that's the reason to buy it. I was at Unified in 2006. I was in the same hotel as ROH Wrestlers in 2007 and at the Liverpool Double Shot in 2007 too. Second up is a book that I don't usually promote, but it has ROH alumni in it. It's a Fan's Perspective 2016, What a Year to Be a Fan of WWE. If you want to find out what happened with AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, etc., make sure you read this book. And lastly, Fan's Perspective, How My Lifelong Dream Became a Nightmare. I was at the Orlando Double Shot in 2008, and I took ROH alumni, my modern-day favourite wrestler, Paul London, to the main event and to the World Heavyweight title, and it's in this book. And then for all three books, are available on paperback and Kindle, and Kindle Limited for free, signed via my Big Cartel. So contact me on a fansperspective.bigcartel.com And that is fine and dandy. Lastly, our social media. So Twitter is at ROH Review. Instagram is at ROH Review. We now have a Facebook page, facebook.com/ROH Review 2019, because that's when we were established. YouTube is one of those funny things that we have to put in the description. And our email is rohreviewoutlook.com. Comments, questions, feedback, send it our way via any of those social medias. And we will crack on with what you need to know. Thank you very much, everyone. And we'll see you soon. Bye for now. Bye.